Chapter 6. This time, when I dream, there is sound. As I fall through the darkness, there's a tinkly, jangly song playing, like the kind of music you hear in doctor's offices and elevators, and without knowing how I know, I realize that the music is piping all the way from the guidance counselor's office at Thomas Jefferson. As soon as I realize this, little bright spots start exploding through the darkness, a zooming gallery of all the annoying inspirational posters my guidance counselor, Mrs. Gardner, keeps on her walls. Except in my dream, they're all blown up by about 100 times, each the size of a house. In one, Einstein is pictured over the words, "Gravity is not responsible for falling in love." There's a poster with Thomas Edison's quote, "Genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration." I'm thinking of trying to grab one of them and worrying about whether it will hold my weight when I spin past a picture of a striped cat hanging off the branch of a tree by its nails. It says, "Hang in there." And it's the funniest thing. As soon as I see it, the whistling in my ears stops and the feeling of terror drains away, and I realize this whole time, I haven't been falling at all. I've been floating. The alarm that wakes me is the sweetest sound I've ever heard. I sit up, a bubble of laughter rising inside me. I have the urge to touch everything in my room, the walls, the window, the collage, the photos cluttering my desk, the Tahari jeans strewn across my floor, and my bio textbook, and even the dull light just creeping over the windowsill. If I could cup it in my hands and kiss it, I would.
"Someone's in a good mood,"
my mom says when I come downstairs. Izzy's at the table in front of her peanut butter bagel, taking slow, careful bites, as usual.
"Happy Cupid Day,"
my father says. He's standing at the stove, burning eggs for my mom's breakfast. "My favorite," I say, scooting in to steal a bite from Izzy's bagel. Izzy squeals and slaps at my hand. I plant a big, sloppy kiss on her forehead.
"Stop flobbering on me," she says.
"See you later, fizzy lizard," I say.
"Don't call me lizard."
Izzy sticks a peanut butter-coated tongue out at me. "You look like a lizard when you do that."
"Do you want any breakfast, Sam?"
my mom asks. I never eat breakfast at home, but my mom still asks me every day. When she catches me before I duck out anyway. And in that moment, I realize how much I love the little everyday routines of my life. The fact that she always asks. The fact that I always say no because there's a sesame bagel waiting for me in Lindsay's car. The fact that we always listen to No More Drama as we pull into the parking lot. The fact that my mom always cooks spaghetti and meatballs on Sunday, and the fact that once a month, my dad takes over the kitchen and makes his special stew, which is just hot dog pieces and baked beans and lots of extra ketchup and molasses. And I would never admit to liking it, but it's actually one of my favorite meals. The details that are my life's special pattern, like how in hand-woven rugs, what really makes them unique are the tiny flaws in the stitching. Little gaps and jumps and stutters that can never be reproduced. So many things become beautiful when you really look. "No breakfast. Thanks, though." I go to my mom and wrap my arms around her. She yelps, surprised. I guess it has been a couple of years since we've hugged, except the mandatory 2-second squeeze on birthdays. "Love you." When I pull away, she stares at me as though I've just announced I'm quitting school to become a contortionist in the circus.
"What?"
my dad says, dumping a pan in the sink and wiping his hands on the dish towel.
"No love for your old man?"
I roll my eyes. I hate it when my dad tries to teen speak, as he calls it. But I don't call him out on it. Nothing can get me down today. "Bye, Dad." I let him wrap me in one of his infamous bear hugs. I'm filled with love from the top of my head to the bottom of my toes, a bubbly feeling like someone's shaken my insides up like a Coke bottle. Everything, the dishes in the sink, Izzy's bagel, my mom's smile looks sharp, like it's made out of glass or like I'm seeing it for the first time. It's dazzling. And again, I have the desire to go around and touch it all, make sure that it's real. If I had time,
I would, too. I would put my hands around the half-eaten grapefruit on the counter and smell it. I would run my fingers through Izzy's hair. But I don't have time. It's Cupid Day, and Lindsay's outside, and I have business to take care of. Today, I'm going to save two lives. Juliet Sykes and mine. Let there be light. Beep, beep. Lindsay shouts out her window as I scurry down the icy walkway, sucking the cold air into my lungs, loving the way it burns, loving even the bitter stink of Lindsay's cigarette and the exhaust that's clotting the air.
Hot mama. How much?
If you have to ask, I say, sliding into the passenger seat, you can't afford it. She grins and hands me my coffee before I can reach for it.
Happy Cupid Day.
Happy Cupid Day, I say, and we clink styrofoam cups. She too looks clearer to me than ever before. Lindsay, with her angel's face and messy, dirty blonde hair and chipped black nail polish and battered leather Dooney and Burke bag that always has a film of tobacco and half-unwrapped Trident original at the bottom. Lindsay, who hates being bored, always moving, always running. Lindsay, who once said,
"It's the world against us, babes."
Drunk and looping her arms around our shoulders when we were out in the arboretum and really meaning it. Lindsay, mean and funny and ferocious and loyal and mine. I lean over impulsively and kiss her cheek.
Whoa, lesboing out much?
Lindsay shrugs a shoulder up to her cheek and wipes off my lip gloss.
Or just practicing for tonight.
Maybe both, I say, and she laughs long and loud. I take a sip of my coffee. It's scalding and has to be the best coffee in all of Ridgeview, in all the world. God bless Dunkin' Donuts. Lindsay chatters about how many roses she expects to get and whether Marcy Posner will, as usual, break down and cry in the bathroom during fifth period because Justin Streamer dumped her 3 years ago on Cupid Day, thus permanently sealing her fate as only medium popular. And I look out the window and watch Ridgeview go by in a blur of gray. I try to imagine how, in only a few months, the trees will shoot their tiny stems into the sky, the barest spray of flowers and green breathed over everything like a mist. And then, a few months after that, the whole town will be an explosion of green, so many trees and so much grass it will look like a painting still dripping wet. I can imagine it waiting under the surface of the world, like the slides just have to be flipped in the projector and summer will be here. And there's Elodie, teetering down the lawn in her shoes with no jacket on and her arms wrapped around her chest. When I see her radiant and alive, the relief is so huge, I let out a tremendous shriek of laughter. Lindsay raises her eyebrows at me.
She'll freeze,
I gasp by way of explanation. Lindsay twirls her finger by her ear.
She's totally cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Did someone say Cocoa Puffs? Elodie says, getting into the car. I'm starving. I twist around to look at her. It's all I can do to keep from climbing into the backseat and jumping on her. I feel an overwhelming urge to touch her, make sure she's really real and here and alive. In some ways, she's the bravest and most delicate of all of us. I wish I could somehow tell her this.
What?
Elodie scrunches up her nose at me, and I realize I'm staring.
What's wrong? Do I have toothpaste on my face or something?
No, I say, and again the laughter bubbles out of me, a surge of happiness and relief. I think I could stay forever in this one moment. You look beautiful. Lindsay giggles, checks Elodie out in the rear view.
There are some bagels under your butt. Beautiful.
Butt bagels.
Elodie reaches into the bag and pulls out a bagel, half squashed, then makes a big deal of taking an enormous bite out of it.
Tastes like Victoria's Secret.
Tastes like thong floss, I say.
Tastes like crack,
Lindsay says.
Tastes like fart,
Elodie says, and Lindsay spits coffee on the dashboard, and I start laughing and can't stop, and all the way to school, we're thinking of flavors for butt bagels, and I'm thinking that this, my life, my friends, might be weird or screwy or imperfect or damaged or whatever, but it's never seemed better to me. As we're pulling into the school's parking lot, I scream for Lindsay to brake. She slams to a stop and Elodie curses as coffee slops all over her. What the hell? Lindsay puts a hand on her chest. You scared me to death. Sorry. I thought I saw Rob. Up ahead, I'm watching Sarah Grundle's Chevrolet turn into Senior Alley 15 seconds ahead of us. The parking space is a small thing, a detail, but today, I'm not going to do anything wrong. I don't want to take any chances. It's like the game we used to play when we were little, where we had to avoid all the cracks in the sidewalk or else it meant we'd kill off our mothers. Even if you didn't believe in it, you made sure you were stepping correctly, just in case. Sorry, my bad. Lindsay rolls her eyes and steps on the gas again.
Please tell me you're not going psycho stalker.
Leave her alone. Elodie leans forward and pats my shoulder. She's just nervous about tonight.
I bite my lip to keep from giggling. If Lindsay and Elodie had any clue at all about what was actually running through my head, they would probably have me committed. All morning, whenever I close my eyes, I keep imagining the feeling of Kent McFuller's lips brushing against mine, as light as butterfly wings. Of the crown of light surrounding his head and the way his arms felt when he was keeping me on my feet. I lean my head against the window. My smile is reflected back at me, growing wider and wider as Lindsay drives up and down Senior Alley, cursing because Sarah Grundle took the very last parking space. Instead of following Elodie and Lindsay into Maine, I break off and head toward Building A, where the nurse's office is, muttering an excuse about a headache. That's where the roses are stored on Cupid Day, and I have some adjustments to make. Okay, so maybe lying isn't 100% kosher on the good deed scale, especially lying to your best friends, but it's for a very, very good cause. The nurse's office is long and narrow. Normally, a double row of cots runs its length, but the cots have been cleared out and replaced by huge folding tables. The heavy curtains that usually keep the place movie theater dark have all been drawn back, and the room is literally sparkling with light. Light bounces off the metal wall fixtures and zigzags crazily over the bright white walls. There are roses everywhere, overflowing their trays, stashed in corners, a few of them even scattered across the ground, petals trampled. And if you didn't know that there was actually an organizing principle to all of it and a purpose, you would just think that someone had set off some kind of a rose bomb. Ms. Devane, who usually oversees Cupid Day, isn't around, but there are three Cupids standing over one of the bins, giggling. They jump and scoot backward when I come in. They've been reading the notes, obviously. It's strange to think about, those little scraps of paper, snippets of words, half compliments and backhanded compliments and broken promises and semi-wishes and almost expressions of what you really want to say. They never tell the full story or even half of it. A room full of words that are nearly the truth but not quite, each note fluttering off the stem of its rose like a broken butterfly wing. None of the girls talks to me as I start walking the aisle, scanning the labels on the trays, looking for the S's. I doubt that anybody else has ever barged in on the rose room, especially not a senior. Finally, I find the tray labeled ST to TA. There are five or six roses for Tamara Studgeon and another half dozen for Andrew Svork and three for a Bert Swartney, who has the most unfortunate name I've heard of in a long time. And there it is. The single rose for Juliet Sykes with a note looped delicately around its stem. Maybe next year, but probably not. Maybe next time, but probably not. Can I help you with something? One of the girls inches forward a couple of feet. She's twisting her hands together and looks absolutely petrified. Juliet's rose is thin and young, delicately tinged with pink. All of its petals are closed. It hasn't bloomed yet. I need roses, I say. Lots of them. Corrections and adjustments. I leave the rose room feeling keyed up and energetic, like I've just had 3 mocha lattes from Caffeine Rush in the mall. I replaced Juliet's single rose with an enormous bouquet. I shelled out $40 for 2 dozen and a note printed in block letters that says, "From your secret admirer." I only wish I could be around when she receives them. I'm positive it's going to make her day. More than that, I'm positive it's going to make things right. She'll have even more roses than Lindsay Edgecombe. I start thinking about Lindsay's eyes bugging out of her head when she sees that Juliet Sykes has beaten her for the title of Most Valograms this year, and I let out a huge snort of laughter right in the middle of AP American History. Everyone whips around and stares at me, but I don't care. This must be what it's like to do drugs. The feeling of coasting over everything, of everything looking new and fresh and lit up from inside. Except without the next day guilt and the hangover, and possible prison sentence. When Mr. Tierney distributes his pop quiz, I spend the whole 20 minutes drawing hearts and balloons around the questions, and when he comes around to collect the papers, I give him a smile so bright, he actually winces. Like he's not used to people looking happy. Between classes, I scour the hallways looking for Kent. I'm not even sure what I'll say to him when I see him. I can't really say anything. He doesn't know that we've spent the past 2 nights together, that both nights we were so close that if one of us had breathed, we would have ended up kissing. That last night I think we might have. But I have this incredible urge just to be around him, to see him doing those familiar Kent-like things, flipping his hair out of his eyes, smiling his lopsided smile, shuffling his ridiculous checkered sneakers, and tucking his hands into the overlong cuffs of his button-downs. My heart shoots into my throat every time I think I see his loping walk or catch sight of some floppy brown hair on a boy. But it's never him. And each time it isn't, my heart does a reverse trajectory down into the very pit of my stomach. I'm guaranteed to see him in calc, at least. After life skills, I stop in the bathroom and spend the 3 minutes before bell primping in front of the mirror, ignoring the s'mores chattering on either side of me and trying hard not to focus on the fact that I'll come face to face with Mr. Daimler in less than 5 minutes. My stomach's been performing its roller coaster move so often, a combination of waiting for Juliet to get the roses, hoping to see Kent, and being disappointed. I'm not sure it can withstand 45 minutes of having to watch Mr. Daimler smirk and wink and grin at the class. I will away the memory of his tongue inside my mouth, wet and sloppy. "Such a slut," one of the sophomores is coming out of the bathroom stall, shaking her head. For one paranoid second, I'm sure she's talking about me, that somehow she has just read my mind. But then her friends explode with laughter, and one of them says, "I know. I hear she had sex with, like, 3 people on the basketball team." And I realize they're talking about Anna Cartullo. The stall door is swinging open, and Lindsay's scrawl is obvious. AC equals WT. And underneath it, "Go back to the trailer, ho." "You shouldn't believe everything you hear," I blurt out, and all 3 girls instantly shut their mouths and stare at me. "It's true," I say, feeling bolder now that I have such a captive audience. "You know how most rumors start?" The girls shake their heads. They're standing so close, I think for a second their skulls are going to knock together. "Because somebody feels like it." The bell rings then, and the sophomores scurry for the door like they've been let out of class. I stand there, willing my feet out the door and down the hall and down a flight of stairs and to the right and into calc, but nothing happens. Instead, I'm fixated by the writing on the stall door, how Allie laughed and pointed to the copycat artists elsewhere. AC equals WT. I'm pretty sure Lindsay wrote it on a whim. 4 measly letters, stupid, meaningless, probably to test out a new marker and see how much ink it had. It would have been better, almost, if she'd meant it. It would be better if she really hated Anna, because it matters. It has mattered. Without thinking about the fact that at this point I'm going to be late to calc, I dampen a strip of paper towel, just as an experiment, and begin scrubbing at the writing on the stall door. It doesn't budge, but then, because I've started, I can't stop. I look under the sink and find a dried-out Brillo pad and a can of Comet. I have to brace the door with one arm and lean hard with the other, scrubbing furiously, but after a little while, the graffiti on the door has lightened, and after a little while longer, you can hardly see the letters at all. I feel so good once I've gotten them off that first door. I go down the row and scrub the remaining two, even though my arm is aching and cramping and I've actually started to sweat a little bit in my tank top, mentally cursing Lindsay the whole time for her whims, for using permanent marker. When all three stalls are finished, I turn the doors out and look at their reflections in the mirror. Blank, clean, featureless. The way stall doors should be. And for some reason, it fills me with such pride and happiness. I do a little dance right there, tapping my heels on the tile floor. It feels like I've reached back in time and corrected something. I haven't felt so alive, so capable of doing things in I don't know how long. By now, I really have ruined my makeup. Little pricks of sweat are beading across my forehead and the bridge of my nose. I splash cold water on my face and dry off with a scratchy paper towel, starting all over again with the mascara and cream blush in rose petal that Lindsay and I both use religiously. My heart is looping crazily in my chest, partly from exhilaration, partly from nerves. Next period is lunch, and lunchtime is showtime.
Will you stop doing that?
Elodie leans forward and presses my fingers, which have been tapping flat against the table.
You're driving me crazy.
You're not turning Rexy, are you, Sam?
Lindsay gestures to my sandwich, which I've only nibbled around the edges. Rexy is her word for anorexic, although I've always thought it sounded like something you would name a dog.
That's what you get for ordering the mystery meat.
Allie makes a face at my roast beef, which I've ordered despite the fact that it's borderline unacceptable. Things that don't matter when you've lived the same day 6 times and died on at least 2 of them. Lunch meats and their relative coolness. To my surprise, Lindsay sticks up for me.
It's all mystery meat, Al. The turkey tastes like shoe bottoms.
Nasty, Elodie agrees.
I've always hated the turkey here,
Allie admits. And we all look at one another and burst out laughing.
It feels good to laugh, and the knot in my shoulders relaxes. Still, my fingers start up their involuntary drumming again, moving all on their own. I'm scanning every single person who enters the cafeteria, looking alternately for Kent. It's like, what, he doesn't eat now? And Juliet's shock of white blonde hair. So far, nada.
To Juliet?
I've been totally zoning out, thinking about Juliet, that for a second when I hear her name, I think I've only imagined it, or worse, said it aloud myself. But then I see that Lindsay's looking at Allie, a strange smile curling on her lips, and I know she must have just asked about whether Juliet got our rose. I totally forgot that Allie and Juliet have biology together, and I'm suddenly breathless. The room seems to tilt as I wait for Allie to respond.
Oh my God, you guys, it was the weirdest thing. She got the biggest bouquet of flowers. She actually smiled.
Allie claps a hand over her mouth, her eyes bugging out.
Oh my God, you guys, I totally forgot to tell you.
Hands clamp down over my eyes and I'm so wound up I let out a little squeal. The hands smell like grease and, of course, lemon balm. Lindsay, Allie, and Elodie crack up as Rob pulls his hands off my eyes. When I look up at him, he's smiling, but there's a tightness around his eyes, and I can tell he's unhappy.
You avoiding me now?
He says, snapping the strap of my tank top like he's 5. Not exactly, I say, trying to sound pleasant. What do you mean? He jerks his head back toward the soda machine.
I've been standing over there for like 15 minutes.
His voice is low. He's clearly not happy to be having this conversation in front of my friends.
You haven't looked over or come over or anything.
You made me wait longer than that, I want to say, but obviously he wouldn't get it. Besides, as I watch him shuffling his scuffed-up New Balance sneakers, I realize he's not really so horrible. Yeah, he's selfish and not so smart and drinks too much and flirts with other girls and can't take off a bra for the life of him, not to mention what comes afterward, but someday he'll grow up a little and make a girl really happy. I'm not ignoring you, Rob. It's just... I blow air out of my cheeks, stalling. I've never broken up with anybody before, and all the clichés keep running through my head. It's not you, it's me. No, it is him, and me. We're better off friends. We were never friends. Things between us have been... He squints at me like he's trying to read in a different language. You got my rose, right? Fifth period. You read the note? Like this will make it better. Actually, I say, trying to keep the impatience out of my voice, I didn't get your rose. I cut fifth.
Miss Kingston.
Across the table, Elodie puts her hand to her chest and pretends to be shocked. I'm very disappointed in you.
More giggling.
I shoot her a look and turn back to Rob. But that's not the point. The point is...
I didn't get a rose from you, Rob says.
And I can see him very slowly starting to put it together. Something is wrong. When Rob thinks, you can almost see gears shifting together in his brain. This morning, I made one other change in the rose room. I stopped by the C's and carefully rifled through Rob's roses, skipping over the rose from Gabby Haynes, his ex-girlfriend, which said, "When are we going to hang out like you promised, sexy?" And removed the one from me with the little note I spent hours agonizing over. Lindsay slaps at Rob's arm, still thinking this is all a joke.
"Be patient, Rob," she says, winking at him. "Your rose is coming."
"Patient?" Rob scowls as though the word tastes bad in his mouth. He crosses his arms and stares at me.
"I get it. There is no rose, right? Did you forget or something?"
Something in his voice makes my friends finally get it. They go silent, staring back and forth from Rob to me, me to Rob. Let me rephrase. Someday he'll make a sorority girl really happy. A blonde named Becky with D boobs who doesn't mind getting manhandled like meat in a marinade. "I didn't forget," I start to say, but he cuts me off. His voice is calm, very low, but I can hear the anger running underneath it, hard and cold and cutting.
"You make such a huge deal about Cupid Day, and then you don't keep up your end of the bargain? Typical."
Inside, my stomach is working like it's trying to digest a whole cow, but I lift my chin, staring at him. "Typical? What's that supposed to mean?"
"I think you know."
Rob passes a hand over his eyes and looks suddenly mean, reminding me of this trick my dad used to do where he would bring his hand down over his face, changing all of his features from happy to sad, then from sad back to happy in an instant.
"You don't exactly have a perfect history of keeping your promises. Psycho alert,"
Lindsay shouts out, probably hoping to diffuse the tension. It works, kind of. I stand up so quickly I knock over my chair. Rob looks at me, disgusted, then taps the chair with his toe, not hard, but enough so that it's loud, and says,
"Buy me later."
He stalks off into the cafeteria, but I'm not watching him anymore. I'm watching Juliet float, drift, skim into the room. Like she's already dead, and we're just seeing her flickering back to life in patches, imperfectly. She's not carrying anything either, not a single stem, just a lumpy brown paper bag as always. My disappointment is so heavy and real, I can taste it. A bitter lump in the back of my throat.
"And then one of the Cupids came in, and I swear, she had like 3 dozen flowers. All for Juliet. I whip around. What did you say? Allie frowns a little at my tone of voice, but she repeats, she just got, like, this huge bouquet of roses delivered to her. I've never seen so many roses. She starts to giggle. Maybe Psycho has a stalker. I just don't understand what happened to our rose, Lindsay says, pouting. I specifically told them third period bio. What did she do with them? I interject. Allie, Elodie, and Lindsay stare at me. Do with what? Allie says. The roses, did she throw them out?
Why do you care?
Lindsay wrinkles her nose. I don't care. It's just... They're all staring at me blankly. Elodie has her mouth open and I can see mushed up French fries in it. I think it's nice, okay? If someone sent her all those roses, I don't know. I just think it's nice.
She probably sent them herself, Elodie says, starting to giggle again.
I finally lose my temper. Why? Why would you say that? Elodie jerks back like I've hit her.
It's Juliet.
Yeah, exactly. It's Juliet. So what's the point? Nobody gives a shit about her. Nobody pays any attention. I lean forward, pressing both hands on the table, my head pounding from anger and frustration. What's the point? Allie frowns at me.
Is it because you're upset about Rob?
Yeah. Lindsay folds her arms. What's up with that anyway? Are you guys okay?
This isn't about Rob, I say, squeezing the words out through gritted teeth. Elodie jumps in.
It was a joke, Sam. Yesterday you said you were scared Juliet would bite you if you went too close. You said she probably had rabies.
That's what really breaks me. Right then, when Elodie says that, or rather when she reminds me that I said that, yesterday, 6 days ago, a whole different world ago. How is it possible, I think, to change so much and not be able to change anything at all? That's the very worst thing about all of this, a feeling of desperate hopelessness, and I realize my question to Elodie is the question that's been tearing me up all along. What's the point? If I'm dead, if I can't change anything, if I can't fix it, what's the point?
Sam's right.
Lindsay winks at me, still not getting it.
It's Cupid Day, you know? A time of love and forgiveness, even for the psychos of the world.
She raises a rose like it's a glass of champagne.
To Juliet.
Allie and Elodie lift their roses, giggling. To Juliet, they say in unison.
Sam?
Lindsay raises an eyebrow.
Care to toast with us?
I spin around and head to the back of the senior section, to the door that leads directly to the parking lot. Lindsay shouts something and Allie calls, she didn't throw them out, okay? I keep going anyway, threading past tables piled with food and roses and bags, everyone talking and laughing, oblivious. I get a pang in my stomach that feels like regret. Everything looks so stupidly, happily normal. Everyone just wasting time because they have so much of it to waste. Minutes slipping by on who's with who and did you hear? On the horizon is the black line of clouds just sitting there, a curtain about to be closed. I scan the parking lot looking for Juliet, bouncing up and down on my toes to keep warm. Music blares from a car in Senior Alley, and I recognize Krista Murphy's silver Taurus gun up toward the exit. Otherwise, the parking lot is still. Juliet has melted away somewhere into the landscape of metal and pavement. I take a breath and exhale a cloud, enjoying the sharp sting of the air on my throat. I'm almost relieved that Juliet is gone. I'm not sure exactly what I would have said to her. And she didn't throw out the flowers after all, that's a good sign. I stand there for a second more, bouncing on my toes, thinking, tonight's the night I'm going to get free of this thing. Thinking of all the things I'm going to do more of in my life. Go up to Goose Point with Izzy until she's too old to stand it. Hang out with Elodie one-on-one. drive into New York and go to a Yankees game with Lindsay and stuff my face with hot dogs and catcall all the players. Kiss Kent. Really kiss him. Slow and long. Somewhere outside. Maybe while it's snowing. Maybe standing in the woods. He'll lean forward and he'll have little snowflakes on his eyelashes again, and he'll brush the hair away from my face and put a warm hand behind my neck, so warm it's almost burning.
Hey, Sam.
Kent's voice. I spin around with a squeak, tripping on my own feet. Just like with Juliet Sykes, I'm so lost in fantasy about Kent that his actual appearance seems like a dream or wishful thinking. He's wearing an old corduroy blazer with patches sewn onto the elbows like a deranged and adorable English teacher. The corduroy looks soft, and I get the urge to reach out and touch it. An urge that has nothing to do with my general sense of today and the preciousness of things. Kent's hands are buried in his pockets, and his shoulders are shrugged toward his ears like he's trying to stay warm.
No calculus today?
No. I've been waiting to run into him all day, but now my mind is a blank.
That's too bad.
Kent grins at me, jogging on his feet.
You missed some roses.
He whips his bag over one shoulder and unzips it, pulling out the cream and pink swirled rose with a gold note card fluttering from one end.
Few of them went back to the office, I think, but I wanted to bring this one to you myself. It's a little crushed. Sorry.
It's not crushed, I say quickly. It's beautiful. He bites the edge of his lip, the cutest thing I've ever seen. I think he might be nervous. His eyes are flitting over my face and then away, and each time they land on me, it feels like the world is falling away, and it's just the two of us in the middle of a bright green field.
You didn't miss anything in math,
he says, and I recognize a Kent McFuller babble coming on.
I mean, we went over some of the stuff from Wednesday's homework because some people were, like, freaking out about the quiz on Monday, but mostly everyone was a little bit antsy, I think, because of Cupid Day, and Daimler didn't really care that...
Kent? He blinks and shuts up.
Yeah?
Did you send me this? I hold up the rose. I mean, is it from you? His smile gets so big it's like a huge beam of sunshine.
I'll never tell,
he says, winking. I've unconsciously taken several steps toward him so I can feel the heat coming off his body. I wonder what he would do if I pulled him to me right now, brushed my lips against his the way he did, the way I hope he did last night. But even the idea sends a flurry of butterflies upward from my stomach, my whole body feeling quivery and uncertain. At that moment, I remember what Allie said to us on the first day, the day it all started, that if a group of butterflies takes off in Thailand, it can cause rainstorms in New York. And I think of all the thousands of billions of steps and missteps and chances and coincidences that have brought me here, facing Kent, holding a pink and cream swirled rose. And it feels like the biggest miracle in the world. Thank you, I blurt out. And quickly add, you know, for bringing me this. He ducks his head, looking pleased and embarrassed.
No problem.
I hear you're having a party tonight? I'm mentally kicking myself for sounding so lame. In my head, this played out so much easier. In my head, he would lean down and do the thing with his lips again, the soft, fluttery thing. I'm desperate to make it all go right again, desperate to get back to that feeling I had last night, we had last night. He must have felt it. But I'm afraid that anything I say could screw it up. A temporary sadness for what I've lost overwhelms me. Somewhere in the endless spinning of eternity, that one tiny fraction of a second where our lips met is lost forever.
Yeah. His face lights up. Parents out of town, you know. Are you coming?
Definitely, I say, so forcefully he looks kind of startled. I mean, I continue at a normal volume. It's going to be the place to be, right?
Let's hope so.
Kent's voice is slow and warm, like syrup.
and I wish I could close my eyes and just listen to it.
I got 2 kegs.
He twirls his finger in the air like, whoop-de-doo.
I would come anyway. I mentally kick myself. What does that even mean?
Kent looks like he gets it, though, because he blushes.
Thanks, he says. I was hoping you would. I mean, I figured you would because you're always at parties, you know, out and stuff. But I didn't know if there was another party or something, or maybe you and your friends do something different on Fridays.
Kent? He does that adorable, quick stop of his mouth.
Yeah.
I lick my lips, unsure of how to say what I want to, squeezing my hands into fists. I have something to tell you. He puckers his forehead.
Adorable. How did I not realize how adorable he is?
And not making it any easier. Deep breaths in and out.
It's going to sound completely insane, but
yeah. He leans even closer until our lips are less than 4 inches apart. I can smell peppermint candy on his breath, and my head starts spinning wildly like it's been turned into a gigantic merry-go-round.
Sam?
Kent and I both instinctively take one step back as Lindsay shoulders her way out of the cafeteria door, my messenger bag and hers slung over one arm. I'm actually grateful for the interruption, since I was either about to confess that I died a few days ago or that I was falling for him. Lindsay lumbers over, being really melodramatic about the fact that she's carrying 2 bags, like they're both made out of iron.
So, are we going?
What? Her eyes flit momentarily over Kent, but other than that, she doesn't even acknowledge him. She plants herself almost directly in front of him like he's not even there, like he's not worth her time. And when Kent looks away and pretends not to notice, I feel sick. I want to convey somehow that she isn't me, that I know he's worth my time. He's better than my time.
Are we going to the country's best yogurt or what?
She puts a hand on her stomach and makes a face.
I swear to God, those fries gave me bloat that can only be solved by chemical deliciousness.
Kent gives me a quick nod and starts to walk away. No goodbye, no nothing, just trying to get out of there as fast as he can. I duck around Lindsay and call out, "Bye, Kent! See you later!" He turns around quickly, surprised, and gives me a huge smile.
"Later, Sam."
He touches his head, a salute, like one of those guys in an old black and white movie, and then he lopes off back into Maine. Lindsay watches him for a minute, then looks at me and narrows her eyes.
"What's up with that? Kent stalk you into submission yet?"
"Maybe," I say, because I don't care what Lindsay thinks. I'm buzzing from his smile and being so close to him. I feel light and invincible, the best kind of tipsy. She stares at me for one beat longer and then just shrugs.
"Nothing says I love you like a brick through the window."
Then she slips her arm through mine.
"Yogurt?"
And that, for all her million and one faults, is why I love Lindsay Edgecombe. The Root and Bud.
"Come on, Sam."
Lindsay's looking up at Kent's house greedily like it's made out of chocolate.
"Your face looks fine."
I'm checking my makeup for the 50th time in the flip-down mirror. I put a final slick of lip gloss on and fish a gummy piece of mascara from the corner of my eyelashes, practicing the speech I've rehearsed in my head. "Listen, Kent, this may sound random, but I was wondering if you, you know, wanted to hang out sometime."
"I don't get it."
Allie leans forward from the back seat, her Burberry puffy jacket crackling. "If you're not gonna do it with Rob, what are you freaking out about?" "I'm not freaking out," I say, despite the fact that I've put on cream blush and moisturizer with a slight tint. I look vampire pale.
"You're freaking out,"
Lindsay, Elodie, and Allie say at the same time and then start laughing.
"Sure you don't want a shot?"
Allie pokes my shoulder with a vodka bottle. I shake my head. "I'm good." I'm too nervous to drink, weirdly. Besides, this is the first day of my new beginning. From now on, I'm going to do things right. I'm going to be a different person, a good person. I'm going to be the kind of person who would be remembered well, not just remembered. I've been repeating this over and over, and just the idea of it is giving me strength, something solid I can hold on to, a lifeline. It's helping me beat back the fear and the buzzing sense somewhere deep inside me that I've forgotten to do something, that something's off. Lindsay puts her arms around me and plants a kiss on my cheek. Her breath smells like vodka and Tic Tacs.
Our very own designated driver, she says. I feel like an after-school special.
You are an after-school special, Elodie says. The warning kind.
You should talk, Slutsky,
Lindsay says, turning around to peg Elodie with a tube of lip gloss. Elodie catches it and squeals triumphantly, then dabs some on her lips.
Well, I'm the freezing kind, Allie says. Can we go in, please?
Madam?
Lindsay turns to me, flourishing her hand and bowing slightly.
All right, let's do it.
I keep on running lines in my head. You know, catch a movie or go get something to eat or whatever. I know it's been a couple of years since we really talked. The party is loud, a giant roar. Maybe it's because I'm sober, but everyone looks ridiculously packed together, hot and uncomfortable. And for the first time in a long time, I feel shy walking in, like people are staring at me. I keep my mind on what I'm here to do. Find Kent.
Crazy.
Lindsay leans forward and circles her hand in the air, gesturing to all the people smashed together, moving an inch at a time like they're all connected by an invisible rope. We push our way upstairs. Everyone's eyes look bright, like doll's eyes, from alcohol and maybe other stuff. It's kind of creepy, actually. Even though I've been in school with all these people forever, they look different. Unfamiliar, and when they smile at me, I just see teeth everywhere, like piranhas getting ready to eat something. I feel like a curtain has dropped away and I'm seeing people for who they really are, different and sharp and unknowable. For the first time in days, I think about the dream I was having for a while, where I'm walking through a party and everyone looks familiar except for one thing, something off. I wonder if the real point of that dream was not that other people were transforming, but that I was. Lindsay keeps one finger jabbed into the small of my back, encouraging me to keep moving, and I'm glad for it. That little point of connection gives me courage. I push my way into the first room at the top of the stairs, one of the biggest, and my heart drops all the way into my stomach. Kent. He's standing in the corner talking to Phoebe Reifer, and instantly my mind goes fuzzy, a big, useless snowstorm. My mouth feels like it's stuffed with cotton, and I totally regret not taking at least one shot, just so I won't be so aware of how weird and tall and awkward I feel, like I'm Alice in Wonderland and have gotten too big for the room. I whirl around to say something to Lindsay. I don't know what, but I need to be talking to someone, not just standing there gaping like some kind of overgrown vegetable. But she's vanished. Of course, she must have gone to find Patrick. I ball my hands into fists and close my eyes. That means any second now in 3, 2, 1.
Sam.
Rob doesn't put his arms around me, and when I turn around, he's looking down his nose at me like I smell. It's insane, but I've actually forgotten he was going to be at the party. I haven't been thinking about him at all.
I didn't think you were gonna show.
Why wouldn't I? I fold my arms across my chest after Rob flicks his eyes not so subtly down to my boobs.
You were acting all crazy today.
There it is, the slur coming out.
So what? Are you gonna apologize?
He grins, lazy and sloppy.
We can figure out a way for you to make it up to me.
Anger bubbles up inside of me. He's looking me up and down like his eyes are fingers, and he's trying to touch all of me at once. I can't believe how many nights I spent on his basement couch letting him slobber on me. Years and years of fantasy fall away in that 1 second. Oh, yeah? I'm struggling to control my temper, but I can't keep the edge out of my voice. Fortunately, Rob's too drunk to notice. I'd like that. To make it up to you, I mean.
Yeah?
Rob's face lights up and he takes a step closer to me, wraps his arms around my waist. I shudder inwardly but force myself to stay put. I dance my fingers up his chest, sneaking a glance at Kent, who's still talking to Phoebe. I'm momentarily distracted. Phoebe has the personality of a freaking noodle, for God's sake. But I snap my eyes back to Rob's face and force myself to flirt. I think we need a little one-on-one time, don't you?
Definitely.
Rob lurches a little to one side.
What were you thinking?
I reach up on my tiptoes so I'm whispering in his ear. There's a bedroom on this floor. Bumper stickers all over the door. Go inside and wait for me. Wait for me naked. I pull away, giving him my sexiest smile, and I promise to give you the best apology ever. Rob's eyes are nearly bugging out of his head.
Now?
Now. He detaches himself from me and takes a stumbling step in the direction of the hallway. Then something occurs to him and he spins around.
You'll be there soon, right?
This time there's nothing forced about my smile. 5 minutes, I say, holding up my right hand with my fingers splayed. I promise. When I turn away from Rob, it's a struggle to keep from bursting out laughing, and all the nervousness I feel about talking to Kent dissipates. I'm ready to march right up to him and shove my tongue down his throat if I have to. Except that he's gone. Shit, I mutter.
That's no way for a lady to talk.
Allie comes up behind me, raising her eyebrows as she takes a swig from the bottle.
What's wrong with you? Attack of the Cochrane crisis?
Something like that, I rub my forehead. Have you, seen Kent McFuller? Allie squints at me.
Who?
Kent. McFuller. I say a little louder, and two sophomores whip around and stare at me. I stare right back until they look away.
The host with the most?
Allie raises her bottle.
Why? Did you break something already? It's a pretty good party, don't you think?
Yeah, good party. I try not to roll my eyes. She's too tipsy to be useful. I gesture toward the back of the house. Lindsay and Elodie should be in the back room, and Kent must be close. Let's circulate. Allie takes my arm.
Yes, ma'am.
I spot Amy Weiss, probably the biggest gossip in the entire school, making out with Oren Talmadge in the doorway like she's starving and his mouth is stuffed with Cheetos. I drag Allie toward them.
You want to circulate with Amy Weiss?
Allie hisses in my ear. Freshman year, Amy spread the rumor that Allie let Fred Dannon and two other boys touch her boobs behind the gym in exchange for a month's worth of math homework. I've never been sure whether the story was true or not. Allie swears it wasn't. Fred swears it was, and Lindsay guesses that Allie only let them look, not touch. But in any case, Allie and Amy have been unofficial arch-nemeses since then. Pit stop. I tap Amy's shoulder and she extricates herself from Oren's mouth.
Hey, Sam.
Her face lights up. She glances quickly at Allie, then back to me, snaking her arms around Oren's neck. Oren looks extremely confused, probably wondering what happened to the suckfish on his face.
Sorry, am I blocking the hallway? Just your butt is,
Allie says cheerfully. I squeeze her arm and she yelps. The last thing I need is for Amy and Allie to get into it. You know, there's a much better spot, I say. If you and Oren want, you know, more privacy.
We want privacy,
Oren pipes up. I smile at him. Open bedroom, bumper stickers on the door, extra soft bed. I raise my fingers to my lips, blow a kiss to Amy. Have fun.
What was that about?
Allie explodes as soon as we're out of earshot. Since when are you and Amy BFF? Long story. I'm feeling good, powerful, and in control. Things are turning out the way they should. I put my hand on the door to Kent's room as I pass it. Sorry, Rob. Allie and I weave through the hallway. I'm scanning the crowd for Kent, ducking into various side rooms, getting more and more frustrated when I don't see him. We hear someone scream, and then there's an explosion of laughter. For a moment, my heart stops, and I think, it can't be. Not tonight. Not again. Not Juliet. But then I hear Oren yell,
"Dude, pull your pants up, for God's sake!"
Allie pokes her head out of the doorway of the room we're in and looks back in the direction of Kent's room. Her eyes get so big and round, she looks like a cartoon character. Sam, you might want to see this. I peek out into the hallway. Rob is booking it toward the stairs, or trying to, at least. It's a little hard for him to move quickly since he's A, absolutely surrounded by people gaping at him, and B, more than a little unsteady on his feet, wearing nothing but his boxer shorts and his New Balance sneakers with mismatched socks. And his hat, of course. He's clutching the rest of his clothes in front of his crotch and keeps barking at people, "What the hell are you looking at?" I would feel bad for him if it weren't for the sneakers. Like what, he couldn't be bothered to take them off? He was too busy planning his method of attack on my bra or something? Plus, when he's almost at the stairs, he lurches accidentally into a sophomore, but instead of pulling away, he wraps her in a drunken hug. I can't hear what he says, but when she untangles herself, I can see she's giggling, like getting mauled by a half-naked, sweaty senior who's blitzed out of his mind is the best thing that's happened to her all day. Yep, I say to Allie, we're definitely broken up. It's official. She's looking at me strangely. Kent? My heart flutters. What? It's Kent. My brain taps out again. She knows. It's obvious that I've been completely obsessing over him. Maybe Lindsay said something after she found us together outside the cafeteria. The Rob thing has nothing to do with... Allie shakes her head, jabs a finger over my shoulder. Kent, behind you. Were you looking for him earlier? Relief washes over me. She doesn't know. Then a tiny twinge of disappointment, too. She doesn't know because there's nothing to know. He doesn't even know. I spin around and search the hall for him. In there. Allie points to a door 10 feet down the hall. From our angle, it's impossible to see more than a few feet into the room, which, from the huge desk blocking over half of the doorway, looks to be a storage space or a study. People are flowing in and out. Come on. I haul Allie off again, but she breaks free. I'm gonna go find Lindsay. She's clearly tired of whatever mission I'm on. I nod, and she scoots off toward the back room, using the vodka bottle like a cattle prod, poking people out of her way. A hand clamps down on my arm, and I jump. I turn around. Bridget McGuire and Alex Lament.
You have Mrs. Harper for English, right?
She doesn't wait for me to answer before launching into her spiel.
Do you know if she handed out the essay assignment for Macbeth? Alex missed doctor's appointment.
Because I didn't go with Lindsay for frozen yogurt after all, something was tugging at me, making me want to stay close to school, to the center of things. I'd almost forgotten about Bridget and Anna and Alex. And now the look on Alex's face, the little crooked smile that used to creep onto Rob's face whenever he'd successfully gotten an extension from one of his teachers for some completely fabricated reason, makes me want to smack him. I think of Anna with her coal-black eye makeup and her improvised lunchroom on the floor of the abandoned bathroom. Even Bridget isn't so bad. Annoying, yes, but pretty and nice and the type of person who probably spends her free time volunteering with sick children. I can't take it. I can't let him get away with it. Bridget's still babbling about Alex's mom being a health nut. I interrupt her. Does anybody smell Chinese food? Bridget wrinkles her nose, clearly disappointed that I haven't been listening.
Chinese food?
I make a big show of sniffing. Yeah, like... I stare directly at Alex, like a big bowl of orange beef. His smile droops a little, but he shrugs and says,
I don't smell anything.
Oh my God! Bridget cups a hand in front of her mouth. It's not my breath, is it? I totally had Chinese food last night.
I keep staring at Alex. What's wrong with you? I ask, not even bothering to keep the edge out of my voice. He blinks.
What?
Bridget looks confused, and for a moment, the three of us stand there, not saying anything. Alex and I have locked eyes, and Bridget is looking back and forth between us so rapidly, I'm worried her neck's going to snap off. Then I smile. You know, health-wise. Why did you have to go to the doctor? Alex relaxes, visibly.
No big deal. My mom wanted me to get some weird shot and, you know, just a general checkup and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I hope they were thorough. I shoot a pointed glance at his crotch. Fortunately, Bridget is staring at him, watching him turn red and doesn't see.
Yeah, pretty much.
He squints at me like he's just noticed me for the first time. I've been looking for a doctor, I breeze on. I feel bad for Bridget, but at the same time, she deserves to know what her lame excuse for a boyfriend is up to. It's so hard to find a good one, you know? Especially one that doubles as a restaurant with a $4.99 lunch special. That's rare.
What are you talking about?
Bridget's voice is a squeak. She whips back to Alex.
What is she talking about?
A muscle is ticking in Alex's jaw. I can tell he wants to curse me out, but knows that would make it worse, so he just stands there, glaring. I put my hand on Bridget's arm. I'm sorry, Bridget, but your boyfriend is really a slime ball.
What is she talking about?
Bridget's voice shoots up another octave, and as I walk away, I hear Alex start trying to calm her down, no doubt feeding her lies as quickly as he can come up with them. I should feel good about what I've done. He deserves it, after all. And in a weird way, I'm only setting things right. But as soon as I walk away, I feel strangely deflated. The feeling of control vanishes, and in its place comes a tingly feeling of anxiety. I flip back through the day's events like I'm scrolling down a computer screen, trying to find some lapse, something I've forgotten to do or say. Maybe I should have gone to Juliet's house earlier to check up on her. Then again, I'm not really sure what I would have said. Hi, can you verify for me that you're not going to throw yourself in front of any cars tonight? That would be great. No explosives, either. This is my life you're playing with. The music's so loud, the notes are hardly distinguishable from one another. I fantasize about taking Kent's hand and pulling him away somewhere quiet and dark. The room downstairs, maybe, or the woods, or someplace farther. Maybe we'll just get in the car and drive.
Sam! Sam!
I look up. In the back room, Lindsay's climbed onto one of the couches, waving at me over the tide of bobbing heads. Allie's next to her, and several feet beyond them, I see Elodie whispering something to Steve Doe. I hesitate, a sense of hopelessness washing over me. It's ridiculous for me to talk to Kent. I have no words to describe how wrong I've been about him, about Rob, about everyone. I don't think I can explain to him how I've been changing. And maybe it's all a lie anyway. Maybe it's impossible to change. In that moment, while I'm teetering between two doorways, the people around me get all quiet and hushed, faces growing slack. Up on the couch, Lindsay falters, her hand flapping uselessly to her side. Next to her, Allie begins opening and shutting her mouth like a fish. The buzzing is all through my body now like the hum of an electrical wire. And there she is, marching down the hallway after all that. Juliet Sykes on a mission.